Hello and welcome to Wine Blast. This episode is an intriguing and topical one where I guarantee you will not only learn things you didn't know before, but also, perhaps more importantly, come away with an even broader appreciation of the true value of wine, because we are talking Ukraine.
Yeah, we did touch on this back in March 2022 on the pod, but only sort of tangentially from the perspective of Georgia. Now we're diving headlong into Ukraine, and we have some eye-opening insights and stories to share. You might not think that Ukraine has much to say in wine terms. If so, you're in for a surprise. And of course, as part of this, we can't not discuss what is the biggest conflict in Europe since World War II. Here's a taster of what's to come.
Situation is continuing to be tense. It's very hard to work, but we still work. Some wineries are still occupied. Some wineries destroyed, some vineyards destroyed. And our agronomists and our winemakers are very, very brave people because they all they sometimes work under the shelling, but they need to do it.
Personally, I know one maker who died because of the Russian missiles. I know a couple of winemakers who are fighting on the front line. There are plenty of sommeliers in Ukraine who are fighting, and there are like several sommeliers that are killed already. Unfortunately, brilliant people, yeah. We didn't like pay money for our PR, but we paid the lives of Ukrainians for the PR of Ukraine, yeah.
Svetlana Tsibak and Tanya Olevska there, who we'll introduce properly when we hear more from them shortly. So we definitely have some hard-hitting content in this one. But there is also, I can promise you, positivity and intrigue and hope. And of course, some delicious wines to boot.
Always, always. Now, what we want to do in this episode is explore the context of Ukraine and really get to grips with the wider situation before we then explore the finer points of wine and everything that goes with that. But before we come on to all of that, we wanted to explain why we're doing this episode now.
Yep, and this is where we put our hands up and say we were shamefully underinformed about Ukraine in general and its wines in particular before recent events, thrust this fascinating nation into the global spotlight. It had been on our general radar, but only really on a fairly kind of peripheral level, hadn't it? Yeah. I mean, you covered it, didn't you, briefly in your first book?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I featured the famous Massandra winery in my first book, which is Wineries with Style, and that's in the Crimea. So Massandra has got one of the largest collections of fine and rare wine in the world, over, I think, a million bottles in these sort of amazing, cavernous, extensive cellars. Apparently, it even made it into the Guinness World Records for the very same reason. Yeah, but that was my introduction, I think, to wine in Ukraine a couple of decades ago now. Gosh, I've been not thinking too hard about
that
it.
That ages you.
I never, really got much beyond that, other than I think probably tasting some of the wines in the Decanter World Wine Awards Platinum, judging, for example.
I mean, we were actually invited to go and be keynote speakers at a wine festival in Kyiv in 2021, weren't we? Just before the Russian invasion, which sadly we couldn't make and which we hugely regret now, as I'm sure everybody can imagine. Now, I actually rooted out the correspondence for this, and in a very kind invitation, the organizer said, "You would honor the festival with your presence. Ukraine is a very dynamic wine market, showing stable growth both in terms of consumption and quality of local wines." Now, we'll come back to this point, but when we declined the invitation, she very sweetly said, "I'll come back to you early next year to discuss the 2022 festival." But of course, Russia then invaded Ukraine in February 2022. And everything changed.
And then more recently, two things happened to sort of tee this episode up. Firstly, at the IMW Symposium in Wiesbaden, we heard the Masters of Wine Symposium, I should say. We heard a very emotional, almost sort of heartrending account of the situation in Ukraine by Svetlana. And then Wines of Ukraine organised a tasting in London, which is our chance not just to taste the wines, but also sit down with Svetlana and Tanya to hear from them firsthand.
Yeah, so here we are now. and I think what we need to do is explain the context of Ukraine as clearly and simply as we can, and then how the wine fits in.
Easy.
Let's go.
Good thing we got Svetlana and Tanya to help us.
I think it's a very good thing we've got them to help us.
It's not an easy thing to do. Anyway, here goes. Let's start with geography, always a good place. And size, always a good place to start. Ukraine is a huge country. The second largest in Europe. And its long history tends to revolve around its capital, Kyiv, and its southern coast, which lies on the Black Sea and Sea of Azov and incorporates the famous peninsula of Crimea.
And can we just say at this point, we're trying to pronounce Kyiv correctly and probably failing.
You say that on behalf of me. I appreciate that. I tried. I made a valiant stab.
I'm terrible. But anyway, just to clarify, we are talking about Ukraine's historic capital city,
yes.
Pronounced Kyiv in Russian, but more like Kyiv in Ukrainian.
Kyiv.
Yeah. And I think we're probably going to struggle generally with pronunciation in this episode. So let's just apologise for that in advance. I mean, how do the BBC correspondents do it?
Well, yeah,
they're brilliant,
they're
aren't
good.
They?
They're
good at their job.
Anyway, to the east of Ukraine is Russia. To its north, Belarus. On its western borders are Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, and Moldova. I have got a list there. I didn't remember that.
I think that kind of shows the size of Ukraine, that it's got that many countries on its
western side. And also
its
unique situation. And its geography is worth bearing in mind in wine terms, because, for example, as you said, you know, the famous Hungarian wine region of Tokaj is only about 65 kilometres from the western Ukrainian wine region of Zakarpattia. So, you know, that's quite close. Mm. And the bodies of water to the south of Ukraine have also, you know, as we said, Black Sea of Azov, have also created some quite suitable conditions for wine production over the years.
Yeah, and Ukraine is not only good for wine. You know, we've got other agricultural products there too, like sunflowers, barley, maize, rapeseed and wheat. You know, before the war, as I'm sure many of you will know, Ukraine was one of the largest exporters of grain in the world and known as Europe's breadbasket.
But Ukraine's geography has also proved problematic. Its location and cultural history has seen it contested, fought over, invaded, subjugated, even, I guess, devastated wouldn't be too strong a word, by invaders from the Mongols to the Ottomans, Nazis, and beyond. You know, its inhabitants are no strangers to hardship. You know, shortly after the Soviet Union was formed in 1922, millions of Ukrainians died from famine in the 1930s during what became known as the Holodomor. During the German occupation of World War II, more than 7 million Ukrainian civilians were killed, including the majority of Ukrainian Jews.
Now, in 1991, skipping forward, Ukraine became an independent nation as the Soviet Union collapsed. This fostered the sense of independent cultural identity in Ukraine, something we're going to come back to in a bit because it's really important from a wine perspective.
Yeah, but Russia, its huge neighbour to the east, has long played a part in the daily life of Ukraine, including its politics. The feeling that Ukraine somehow belongs to Russia and that it was a mistake to have lost it following the collapse of the Soviet Union persisted. In 2014, there were mass demonstrations after President Viktor Yanukovych decided to prioritise closer ties with Russia over a deal with the EU. Yanukovych fled and was booted out of office, shortly after which Russia annexed Crimea. And then after years of unrest between pro-Russian separatists and government forces in eastern Ukraine, Russia launched a full-scale military invasion of Ukraine in February 2022.
Now, accurate figures are hard to come by, but the most reliable recent estimates put the total number of killed and wounded on both sides at around 500,000. Initially, the dogged resistance of the Ukrainian people not only stopped Russian forces in their tracks, but also pushed them back. But now, nearly 2 years on, a terrible stalemate has developed, with both sides using drones to monitor and attack in lethal fashion, which obviously hinders large movements of troops or vehicles, on top of which Russia has laid vast quantities of mines, again making any potential Ukrainian progress painstakingly slow.
So apparently mines, missiles, rockets and shells have now become major hazards in Ukrainian vineyards. We'll come on to this in a bit more detail, but as an aside, there was an intriguing story in Decanter written by Mikhail Houdin entitled The Release of the Ukrainian Grad Crew. And it related to how our father and son winemakers, Mikhailo and Georgi Molchanov, I hope I'm pronounced that okay, went out to prune their vineyards early in the conflict and found an unexploded Russian missile from a Grad launcher among the vines. They posted a photo on Facebook of Mikhailo making a V for victory sign in the vineyard next to the missile, and it sort of went viral.
I can imagine it did, yeah. Two fingers up to the enemy and all that, you know.
Sort of. So, you know, brilliantly. Yeah. They just sort of worked round the missile and all the other dangerous gubbins in the vineyard. And we're talking about a tiny winery here, Slivino, yeah, which apparently makes 3,000 bottles a year. And they said they were actually lucky because they didn't have to deal with mines, which many other vineyards do. You know, Svetlana estimated that at least 240 hectares of vineyards have been heavily mined in Ukraine. Mm. I mean, that's... doesn't bear thinking about, isn't it? But anyway, to cut to the chase, Slivino eventually released a Pet Nat sparkling wine under the name Grad Cru, not Grand Cru, obviously. Don't need to spell this out, but Grad Cru, we get the pun, with a picture of a missile launcher launching a bottle of fizz on the label and references to their missile-infused vineyard and a wine with hints of metal and gunpowder. It sold out straight away and all proceeds went to the Ukrainian military.
That is just a brilliant story, isn't it? I mean it's sad and dark in so many ways, but also inspiring. Mm. You know, some humour in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, to go back to the bigger picture, we were talking, weren't we, about the current military stalemate, largely down to the use of drones and mines. Now, in order to have any chance of breaking this stalemate, Ukraine needs advanced Western weaponry fast. But progress on that front has been pretty slow. Plus, the Gaza conflict has shifted attention and support away from Ukraine. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin is calculating that time is on his side because, frankly, Russia has far more resources than Ukraine, and Western support may waver over time, especially if Donald Trump is elected in the US.
Yeah, yeah. But what you do hear time and again is just how resilient the Ukrainian people are, how morale remains high for victory and reclaiming their sovereign territory. And what is also apparently happening is, you know, amid all the chaos and devastation of war, there's a sort of crystallization, a catalyzing of Ukrainian identity, a sort of a flourishing of Ukrainian culture. Putin bet that, you know, Ukraine would crumble easily and accept Russian rule. In fact, what's happened is quite the opposite. You know, a fierce national pride has developed. And you can see that in expressions of culture like books, podcasts, you know, blogs, social media, but also in wine.
And that's the amazing thing, isn't it? You know, that in a way, by supporting Ukrainian wine, we can help celebrate their culture and identity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perhaps in a small way, you know, take a stand against tyranny and aggression, you know, but more importantly, help Ukraine forge a brighter future for itself. I mean, didn't Svetlana say in the IMW symposium that winemaking may not be a strategically important sector for Ukraine, but it is really important culturally?
Yeah, yeah. And that sums it up nicely, you know. On that note, I did see that there'd been requests made to use frozen Russian assets in Europe to help rebuild Ukrainian infrastructure, including vineyards and wineries. I'm not sure if it'll ever happen, but it was just an interesting one to see. And it's an interesting notion, you know, especially given how many, you know, vineyards and wineries have been damaged or destroyed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we should definitely move on to more winey subject matter now after our brief attempt to summarise the geopolitical situation.
Not complicated.
Maybe
at all.
Perhaps just very briefly give the wine context.
Good idea. Yeah.
So
it seems the Phoenicians and ancient Greeks recognised the wine potential of Ukraine, especially along the coast of the Black Sea and Sea of Azov. Ancient wine presses and amphora have been found in this area dating back to the 4th century BC. Wine spread and developed across the country in the Middle Ages with the help of monasteries. Apparently, the main cathedral in Kyiv used to store huge amounts of wine in its cellars back in the day.
Sounds like good usage to me.
Yeah,
brilliant. More recently, it's been a bit of a rollercoaster ride for wine in Ukraine. According to the Oxford Companion to Wine, in 1913, Ukraine's vineyard was 54,000 hectares. But after World War I and phylloxera, three quarters of the vineyard was lost. falling back to just 13,000 hectares by 1919. After that, it grew to over 100,000 hectares, but World War II knocked it back by almost a half to 68,000 hectares. Lots of figures here on there. Mm. Anyway, but then the post-war Soviet period was all about huge state farms and nationalized producers, and Ukraine reached a high point, high tide mark, if you like, of 249,000 hectares by 1980.
That's huge, isn't it? Nearly five times the size it was about 70 years earlier.
Exactly.
And I think for context, it's probably good to say that, you know, that's more than the size of Argentina's total vineyard as it stands today.
Yeah, which I think is just over 200,000 hectares. Mm. Interesting, isn't it? But, you know, that did include Crimea, which was ceded to Ukraine by the Soviet Union in 1954. Anyway, I mean, you know, much of that was just really low quality stuff churned out in vast quantities. Since then, the vineyard has steadily receded, as it probably should have, particularly during the Soviet alcohol alcohol prohibition campaign of the late 1980s, when many vineyards were destroyed, and it's thought actually many unique local varieties were lost, which is a crying shame. But these days, Ukraine's vineyard is thought to be around 37,000 hectares, but there are an extra 17,000 hectares in Russian-controlled Crimea on top of that, which is worth bearing in mind. Mm.
And there's been a growing interest, hasn't there, in quality and small-scale craft producers recently. And I think there are now around 100 licensed wineries, although that was almost double before the war.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is happening, or it has been happening. And you know, all over the country too, apparently. After independence in 1991, in Svetlana's words, quality surged. And there have also been some helpful changes in the law since 2016, you know, due to lobbying by the wine sector. They've managed to slash red tape and costs for smaller producers. They used to have to pay hefty fees on an annual basis, but no longer. And that's really opened things up. So, you know, the result has been a boom in quality wine production and consumption in Ukraine.
Yeah, and I think this is where we come back to the point about Ukraine back in 2021 being a dynamic wine market, both in terms of consumption and quality of local wines. Yeah. But that was before the Russian invasion. Mm. And at that point, Ukraine introduced a dry law, meaning no alcohol sales. Mm. And electrical power was intermittent, so internet sales went right down, and staff were suddenly thin on the ground. And I mean, didn't one of the major wine distributors get bombed as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think importers Good Wine lost 15 million euros worth of wine when their warehouse was hit in Kiev by Russian rocket fire. I think we actually mentioned that back in our episode in March 2022. It was early in the war, you know, and one of the main glass and bottle factories in Kiev was also destroyed, which meant people couldn't bottle their wine. You know, on top of that, there were wineries and vineyards suddenly in occupied Russian territory, some of which were looted and destroyed, like the historic Prince Trubetskoy winery near Kherson, which apparently has lost about $1 million worth of wine, or the Art Winery in Bakhmut, which has transferred production wholesale to another region now. I mean, so, you know, things became pretty tricky. That dry law, incidentally, has been repealed since. But it's, you know, early on, this was, and since, it's been hard.
Yeah. I mean, although, you know, we hear since, and going back to your point about resilience, that wine people in Ukraine have been remarkably resourceful in getting their businesses back up and running, keeping the show on the road, and also prioritising exports.
Yes.
You know, destinations like Romania, Denmark, the USA, Latvia, Turkey, Poland, Japan and Estonia have all been successfully targeted, apparently. So that all seems to be going pretty well, given the context.
Absolutely. You know, so I think this is a good moment to bring in our first guest. Tanya Olevska represents the Ukrainian wine company in the UK. She also has a travel agency, and before the war visited many Ukrainian wineries in person, so has first-hand knowledge of wine all across the country.
Didn't you say she was also writing a book about Ukrainian wine and the food?
Yes, absolutely. She did mention that. I guess she's perfectly placed to answer our questions. I chatted to her at the Wines of Ukraine tasting in the not entirely quiet surroundings of Wine Club 67 Pall Mall, while hordes of sommeliers busied themselves around us. And that detail is important to bear in mind, given what she goes on to say. I asked her to give us a bit of a context to Ukrainian wine.
So it's a very interesting question because Ukraine is an ancient country where the wines were produced. There were ancient Greeks and the Romans who planted the vineyards in Crimea in southern parts. And then, as in all the European countries, it was a little bit reduced, the winemaking. And the new wave, it's from 2010. Many of, you know, people, because in Ukraine, for small wineries, especially for craft wineries, the winemaking is not like something that is given by heritage. It's not from father to son. They just start in this tradition. It's something new because some people, they like the like wines, and they decide to start planting the vines or buy somewhere and try to make wines by their own. And then when they realize that they can give it to try to their friends, and the friends are delighted, and they guess, oh, okay, I can produce some wines to people and share with them with my passion. So for majority of them, winemaking was hobby, which now became like their main occupation.
So this move from big, large winemaking companies to small craft producers, that's come from people sort of thinking, oh, we can do this on a small scale. This is fun. This is interesting. And we can make quality.
Initially, like in the beginning of 2000, we were just several big companies that produced wines, and the quality was not good because the big ones, they like didn't want to make quality wines. They wanted to like big quantity of wines, and other wineries like Colonist and Shamba, they just started their production, so they didn't have that experience and the age of wines to produce quality wines. So, and when in 2010 these small wineries appeared in 2012 or a little bit later, they started to be competitors even to those big wineries. And do you know, I saw their way, and during the last 5 years, this craft winemaking, it has a huge increase because they have aged wines, experience, knowledge. They try the wines of other wineries. They can compare. And it's good because they have a friendly environment, these craft winemakers, and they share some ideas, some knowledge, and so on. They go abroad, actually, to have more experience. Craft winemaking is booming, and that's why big wineries, they started to launch the new lines of wines, like upgrade them, to make, to compete these smaller ones, because smaller ones, they started to, catch the attention of the public, I would say. Yeah.
So there's a sort of quality wine revolution going on right now in Ukraine.
Yeah, definitely.
I know it's really difficult, and you know every nook and cranny of Ukraine. If you had to summarize the appeal of Ukrainian wines for people, if you had to recommend people try Ukraine, why would they do that? What would you say is the main sort of calling point, calling card, selling point for Ukrainian wine?
I would say they are unique. We have four indigenous grape varieties. It's not too much comparatively to Georgia or Italy, for sure. But anyway, otherwise it's easy to remember them. So I will tell you, and you can't remember them. It's Citron Margarita. It's Suka Limanski. It's still Tikaruk. So there are three white ones and one red one, which is Odessa Black, the most famous grape variety of Ukraine.
I will remember those. Thank you for telling me. What's the situation now, you know, post-war began 2022? How are things looking now?
The things changed. There are plenty of opportunities. There are plenty of challenges, plenty of hardships. So both sides. The hardships and challenges are lack of staff because many people went to the front line, many people went abroad, so wineries are in shortage of people, even to have the harvest now done.
So some of the wine community are fighting in the war efforts.
I know personally, I know one maker who died because of the Russian missiles. It was in Kyiv in the first days when the war started. I know a couple of winemakers who are fighting on the front line. There are plenty of sommeliers in Ukraine who are fighting, and there are like several sommeliers that are killed already. Unfortunately, brilliant people, yeah.
The staff is an issue.
First one is staff. The second is increase of prices. Because when the war started here, we had a big glass factory, Vitro Park, and it was bombed as well. So they needed to, and the majority of wineries in Ukraine, they bought the bottles there. So they needed to go abroad. And abroad, they started to increase the prices because of the gas price increase. So it was like a chain of things that influenced the price in Ukraine, yeah. So these are two factors, and the first year was very, very hard because it was a dry law during the first months of the war, so people can't even buy, order wine, and then the last autumn, winter, and part of spring, because of the missiles attacks on the energy system of Ukraine, there was no internet, no light, so people... they couldn't order the wines online. It was another problem.
And you're looking to export more now as well?
So this is the big advantage that we didn't like pay money for our PR, but we paid the lives of Ukrainians for the PR of Ukraine. Yeah, because before, when you were saying I'm from Ukraine, people said, where is it? For instance, not all people, but some of them, yeah. And now everybody knows where is Ukraine and know about the regions of Ukraine. And it's easy from PR, from communication part, and people would love to support Ukraine and to like make plenty of wine events, charity events, and so on. So from this part it's easier, but there is still hard work on further promotion, yeah, because sometimes people buy wines, I mean like professionals, yeah, and then they think that it will be easy to sell Ukrainian production because it's Ukraine, but it's not. There is still like a lot of work behind.
To convince people to try it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the quality will then convince them to buy it just as on its quality, not the fact it's from Ukraine necessarily.
Yeah, this is the point. We would love to convince our consumer that the wine is like valuable and it doesn't matter from which country it is.
Last question. What's the future for Ukrainian wine?
I'm happy because here in the UK we have such an enthusiastic team of wine experts, wine lovers, and real patriots of Ukrainian wines. I believe in prosperity here in the UK. Yeah, I believe in prosperity at our motherland, Ukraine. So anyway, consumers started to buy the Ukrainian wines more, and it's very important, you know, when it's on the basic level. I do hope that we'll enter the US market in 2024, the wines of Ukraine, and probably cover some bigger part of Europe. Because some companies they sell their production in Asia already, so we are open to the world.
That's wonderful, Tanya. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thank you so much, Peter.
We're open to the world, and I think the world is reciprocating, isn't it? Gosh, they've paid a high price for global renown. But I suppose the key thing now is that they move beyond the sympathy sales, as it were, and take the chance to convince the world Ukraine can make great wine, and so people should keep buying it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely their strategic goal, you know, initially in the UK and Europe, but also then further afield in US, Asia and beyond. You know, as Tanya says, this is all fairly recent for Ukraine, but exciting things are happening. You know, craft wine is booming, and it's a bona fide expression of Ukrainian culture and terroir.
Intriguing what she said about the indigenous or, you know, local varieties too. And yes, that's something we'll be coming on to with Svetlana and indeed in our tasting. The bottles in front of me are beckoning, but first, a recap. Ukraine has a long history of both wine and conflict. Since the turn of the millennium, Ukrainian wine consumption and production has surged in quality and interest, creating a new reality in a country previously known for its grain and sunflower oil. Though the Russian invasion has damaged the country and its wine sector, resilience and cultural pride has seen Ukraine's wine producers bravely soldier on and mount an ambitious export strategy.
So now we come on to our second guest, also recorded amid general wine service hubbub. Svetlana Tsibak, like Tanya, is a proud Ukrainian. She is a master's graduate, president of the Ukrainian Association of Craft Winemakers, and also is also founder member of Wines of Ukraine. She's CEO of the Baykush Winery, close to the Black Sea in the Mykolaiv region, not far from what is currently the front line. They work with French, Italian, Georgian and local Ukrainian grape varieties, and they experiment in their winemaking using amphora, skin contact and other trendy things. Anyway, I asked her to talk about Ukraine's wine story.
It's impossible to say about this briefly because Ukraine, it's really a very, it's long-standing, has a long-standing tradition of winemaking and wine growing. Ukraine, it's an old country, old winemaking country, but once we lost our originality, I mean, so everyone just decided that we are a country who produced the bulk and sell to some Soviet Union states, etc. But last two decades, it seems a revival for Ukrainian winemaking, and we started with a new wave of Ukrainian winemaking. So since 2010, appear a lot of craft wineries, small family-run wineries. Who pay more attention to the quality, not to the quantity. And our winery is one of those wineries, and we started in, we were first who decided to revive these traditions.
Tell me about the natural conditions that are good for winemaking in Ukraine.
Really, Ukraine has a very, very good natural conditions, and it's also very good since the global climate change. Ukraine has received a big bonus because now we can grow the grape not only in the south part of Ukraine or west part of Ukraine as previously, we also can do it in the northern regions, so like Kyiv, Chernihiv, Lviv. And now we consider to make all Ukrainian territory as a winemaking regions.
So that is the idea, is it? That more and more of the whole of Ukraine could be... Is there wine planted all over Ukraine now?
Yes, you can do it now, but officially we have five administrative regions, six with the Crimea, temporarily occupied by Russians. So, but last year, We work very hard to expand all these regions to all territory of Ukraine because we have five official wineries in Kyiv region, just in Kyiv Oblast, I mean, region. Yeah, in Chernihiv we have one. In Lviv we have more than 15 wineries. So we just talk with our institutes of climate to make this permission for these regions to make them official as well.
So what are the best, I know it's hard to generalize, but what are the most exciting wine styles and maybe grape varieties coming out of Ukraine now?
All Ukrainian regions, wine regions, and even not official, non-official wine regions are very different with the climate, with the terroir, with the soils, with everything, even with the grape varieties that we planted there. And it's different style of wines. For example, from south part of Ukraine, you will find more fruity wines. It's more about white wines. Actually, my winery is also in the south part of Ukraine, and we produce mostly white wine. And in spite of hot weather and a lot of, and high alcohol in our region for our wines, it's a very, very good acidity. It's a very high acidity. The Carpathia region, west part of Ukraine, they more about red. Before they produce a lot of semi-sweet and sweet wines. Now they, of course, they turn to the dry wines, and it's also completely different style of wines and different grape varieties, because there is more influence from Hungary and Austria. They have grapes like Traminer. In south part of Ukraine, we have our grape varieties. And the base institute who makes some cross of grapes, we also use it. So the Sablek, it's the most famous grape variety in our region. It's a cross of Alicante Boucher and Cabernet Sauvignon.
You have lots of interesting crosses, interesting international grape varieties. You also got some indigenous grape varieties, haven't you?
Yes, in south part of Ukraine, we have mostly in Mykolaiv region. It's indigenous grape. It's Tlitikuruk. We don't have a lot of indigenous grape, and we even can call it like indigenous grape. It's local grape, because we know that. This grape variety come to Ukrainian territory, to this territory when Turkish Empire colonized our region. Because our region was always colonized by someone, you know, even now. So it was by Turkish Empire, then Greece. So now it's Ukraine, and we have from both countries, we have some influence, from the historical influence in winemaking. And yes, Tlitikuruk, we just think that it comes to this land from Turkey, because they have actually the same grape variety, but a little bit in another pronunciation.
So what's the state of play now? What's the situation, you know, following the Russian occupation of Crimea in 2014 and then obviously the more recent war since 2022?
Even part of my region, Mykolaiv region, is still occupied for now. Situation is continuing to be tense. It's very hard to work, but we still work. We still do harvest. We even planted some more hectares of vineyards last year. So we can't stop work in the wineries, in vineyards, because if you stop to work to take care about vineyards, you know you can load them. Some wineries, of course, are still occupied. Some wineries destroyed. Some vineyards destroyed. Anyway, it's too hard to work. It's not really easy. And our agronomists and our winemakers are very, very brave people, because they all they sometimes work under the shelling, but they need to do it.
I was going to say, you know, how do you make wine in what is effectively a war zone?
Especially my winery. We are just few kilometers from the occupied territory, from the front line. And it's too dangerous to work on the vineyards, especially now when we harvest and the shelling is not stop. Anyway, but what can we do?
Yeah, so you try to keep going as
yes,
best you can.
Yes, of course. Or we need to take a decision that we close our winery and we just stop work on the vineyards, or we need to continue. Of course, the most important is people and people's life, but we try.
Are you looking to export more?
Yeah, we met a really big interest from foreign countries to Ukrainian wines. First, it was like to help us, to help the winemakers, wineries, to run their business, to stay with some, to just hold the company with some economy. But then they placed second, third order, so the wine... The wines are interesting. You know.
So the first order may have been in solidarity.
Yeah, it's like solidarity.
The second order was because they like the wines.
Yeah.
That's very positive, isn't it? What message would you give to wine lovers about Ukrainian wine?
Okay, discover something new. Discover something new with Ukrainian wines. Yeah, discover the taste of Ukraine.
What's the future for Ukrainian wine?
It's difficult to say, but I think now we are... too famous in the world, I mean our wines, and we need to develop it. We need to pay a lot of attention to quality, to marketing, to promotion of our wines. This is our future.
Does wine offer some hope to Ukraine?
Yeah.
Svetlana, thank you very much
indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For your time.
So wine does offer some hope, even though it's difficult and a long-term project. But equally with wine, you do need to keep going because it's a never-ending cycle in the vineyard and winery, and you can't let that drop. I mean, it's such a hard situation, isn't it, for them all?
It really is, you know. But, you know, maybe it can also provide a sort of helpful focus during a difficult time, help keep going. You know, sometimes that's good. It was interesting to hear Svetlana's winery has been expanding despite the conflict, planting new vines, which I understand other people are doing. I mean, partly apparently to sort of compensate for the loss of the vineyards in Crimea. But, you know, they're expanding. And, you know, obviously Ukraine as a whole is trying to enlarge its wine map. You know, attempting to get official recognition for regions that are all over the country, like Kyiv and Lviv, but which aren't recognised as proper wine regions in their own right for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see the Ukraine wine map evolve, won't it?
Yeah.
Also for us to get a better feel for these intriguing grape varieties and terroirs. Yeah. I mean, apparently the most planted variety in Ukraine is still Rakatsateli, an ancient Georgian variety, but there are lots of other things, including international varieties like Chardonnay, Pinot and Cabernet, but also things like Furmint and Saparavi, and these local specialities too, on which note we should taste.
Come on,
Let's do it.
I should, you know, say I tasted a fair few wines at the Wines Ukraine tasting where I saw Tanya and Svetlana. There were, I think, 11 really interesting wineries there. I tasted a nice Chardonnay-based fizz from Odessa Prestige, you know, a sort of complex Irsay Oliver from Villa Tinta, a slightly crazy amber Muscat Otonel from Father's Wine. But we then called in and retasted some of my favourites from tasting, which are the ones we have here.
Okay, so come on, what are we starting with? I'm thirsty.
Okay, right. So first up, we got the Shabo Telti Kuruk Reserve 2022. So this is the local grape variety, possibly of Turkish origin, that both Svetlana and Tanya mentioned. And Shabo is a family winery established in 2003, based in the Odessa region, which has made a speciality out of it. So this is just really crisp and fresh and aromatic, isn't it? It's full of pear fruit, herbal tones. You sort of said it was almost a bit like Sauvignon Blanc on the nose, but, you know, very upbeat,
it's just upbeat,
refreshing.
Yeah, refreshing. You know, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Slakes you first.
So next up, we have a really cool, funky-looking bottle, which is the Biologist Craft Winery. I can't get my tongue around this ever. Sokolimanski. Do you think that's right?
Sokolimanski. Yeah.
That's a great variety. 2022. So that's another local variety made by a winery based in the Kyiv region that focuses on low intervention, you know, slightly experimental styles. Yeah. And this is a really, really characterful wine. It's full of clove and ginger and sort of orange rind and apricot flavours. It's fresh but quite fleshy with a touch of fine chalky tannin. It's really fun and different. I love the label. And when you think about food, maybe a sort of a Persian style cuisine, I think, would go really well with it.
It's
very well made. And it's the kind of wine you want from Ukraine. It's got a bit of attitude.
It does. I mean, it's sort of a gentle orange style, isn't it? It's sort of skin contact. You get a little bit of skin contact texture there, which is great.
And that slightly tannic feel for a while.
And that one's, I think it's going to be about £17 in the UK. And I think that's really good value at that price. A lot of wine there. You know, I should say that these wines should be available from the Ukrainian Wine Company from January 2024. They've got an order coming in. We'll put the details and links on our site. But the next wine, in the meantime, is from Baykush. Svetlana's family winery in Mykolaiv. It's their Larici Timoraso 2021. Now, this is serious stuff, isn't it?
Timoraso
is, as many of you will know, a northern Italian white grape variety. And this is really complex and characterful. Aromas sort of roasted almond and then dried peach flavours. It's got a really broad texture, multi-layered profile on the palate. It's, again, really different, full of character, full of attitude, in your words. It's a food wine in a good way.
Yeah.
Just so impressive.
And then to finish off, we have a red, the Colonist Odessa Black 2021. The label is baffling. Can't deny, but the wine is intriguing, isn't it? It's kind of a, dare I say, a black hole of a wine. It's completely opaque in colour, almost inscrutable on the nose, you know, the aroma. But you've got some hints of some crushed black fruit and smoky, leafy, graphite-y notes. And then, yeah, it's sturdy in the mouth, but it's also drinkable and characterful and different. It's got a nice savoury note underlying. I think it's one for a properly hearty, rich casserole.
Yeah. And maybe one that will evolve over time too, sort of come out of itself a bit more.
It's only a couple of years old now.
Exactly. And a lot of wine for something that's going to be about £18-19. And, you know, a taste of Ukraine. Given it's made from Odessa Black, as you said, or I think it's called Odesky Cherny locally. I'm not sure about my pronunciation. Sorry, but that's what it says on the label, which is why it was hard to read. And Odessa Black, you know, is a crossing made in Odessa in 1972. Skolimansky is another crossing made in Odessa as well. So, you know, they've got these sort of local specialities. And you can see that combination of Alicante Boucher power and rusticity with the tannin and sort of herbal hints of Cabernet coming together. And I don't know, I think it captures the best aspect of all of these wines, which is that they are, you know, unapologetically different and characterful. They're sort of doing their own thing with a bit of a swagger. And I think that's great to see.
Yeah, and it's a lot of potential to build on, isn't it, there? And build on and develop over time as Ukraine's proud, you know, wine sector continues to grow and expand and diversify. So cheers to that.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned tasting Ukrainian wine at the Decanter World Wine Awards Platinum Tasting, which is when the best wines chosen from the something like 18,000 wines that enter the competition go to a final sort of elite selection and triage. I just wanted to mention it in case anyone is concerned we're being overly generous in our assessments here.
Because of Ukraine's general situation terrible times the wine community are going through and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
But, you know, so the content, you know, from that competition is that, you know, we gave a gold to the Charbot Chardonnay in 2021 before the 2022 invasion. Plus, you know, just as a general point of context, Ukraine won 37 medals in the 2023 awards, including a platinum for a sweet muscat from Charbot, which is really good, who's Telti Kuruk we tried. So, you know, those are decent results from a very rigorously judged international competition that I think, you know, validate the standard and potential of Ukrainian wine, which we would agree with.
Wasn't there a story about a winery going to some epic lengths to submit their wines, only a Ukrainian winery, to submit their wines to the Decanter World Wine Awards?
I think that was the 2022 competition just after the invasion, and it was Baykush,
Svetlana's
winery. To get the wines to the competition in time, they had to, I think, firstly whisk wines away from the sort of rampaging Russian armies in the east. They sent cases of wines to a friend's office in Hungary and moving them over the border one case at a time over 2 weeks. Then they got the brother of Ukrainian tennis star and winery owner Sergei Stakhovsky to fly from London, courier the wines back, then hand carry them to Decanter.
Wow.
That's dedication, isn't it?
Really is.
Most other people just sort of zip up their FedEx box and shoot them off.
It sounds a bit like a story from a movie, doesn't it? They need to make a movie. Anyway, it's a great one to end on. And actually, perhaps this is a good way to preface our final summary. Ukraine is a nation facing many challenges. Its conflict with Russia, chief among them, with many lives lost, winemakers and sommeliers among them. But wine, which has more history in this region than most of us realise, represents a source of hope. A new breed of winemakers is prioritising quality over quantity, character over commercial volume, showcasing Ukraine's varied regions, terroirs and grape varieties to increasingly good effect. And now more and more, they're sending their wines all around the world so we can support and celebrate Ukrainian culture and spirit and resilience by raising a glass.
Well said. On which note, we'll put details of all the wines we've tasted on our website show notes, where we'll also put links to the Ukrainian wine company, among other things. Thanks to Svetlana Tsibak and Tanya Olevska. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Until next time, cheers.